You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where the only boycotts from Twitter we listen to are called by Tony Danza. I'm your host, Justin M. Wisniewski, and if you've been a fan of this show for years, 5 years, maybe, I don't know, I think it's 5 years, whenever Winter Soldier came out, and you've been waiting, the episode is finally here. It is here. And if you're a new fan, you are going to find out why throngs of people are fans of this show. All five of you. This is the episode you've been waiting for. Joining me this trip from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards.
Well, now I'm excited to find out what the hell's going on. That was a hell of a teaser right there.
Did you read the outline?
This is the show. We have an outline? What is an outline? The thongs of people?
I said throngs. I didn't say this isn't Cisco. This isn't the Cisco edition. Throngs.
Grand Admiral Throngs?
Wow, is that an obscure Star Wars reference?
It's not that obscure now that he's been officially incorporated into canon.
What? Which one is he?
He's the blue one.
Dr. Manhattan?
He's the blue admiral from the Rebels TV series. The animated TV series.
Oh, that's why I wouldn't know what that is.
That's right.
I love how you made this about Star Wars, though, so kudos to you.
Always.
Also joining us from Dale's Lawn, identifying as a woman to forgo his white male gay privilege, William Green.
Hello. It is a beautiful weekend here in California, and I'm inching closer and closer to the store being open. And this weekend, my brother came to visit, and I put him to work immediately. We fixed a bread oven. So that's exciting things to do when you come from cold Michigan to warm California, is to spend 6 hours fixing a bread oven.
How dare you?
Not a euphemism, either. A literal bread oven.
A literal bread oven, yeah. We fixed the proofer and the oven part.
You were supposed to forget your white male gay privilege, but you're obviously using it. You make someone come here and fix a bread oven for you, and you don't even pay him.
That's right. I didn't even pay him. I did
also
take a
bit. Just invented a new term there for what William does is for gay.
I also took him to Korean barbecue, like just a local place here in Torrance last night. And it was funny because he was like, oh, I want to get some Korean food. I was like, oh, okay, well, we'll go to Korean barbecue. And he had been to Korea with my sister, but they had not done a Korean barbecue. So I gave him a Korean experience in L.A. that he had not had, despite visiting Korea.
Well, probably because when they were in Korea and they were looking up Korean barbecue places, there were no results found because they just called them barbecue places.
That's probably true.
Thank you.
Not where I thought that joke was going to go. I thought you were going to say he avoided all of them because they serve dog.
Oh, no. It's the old Belgian waffle joke. Why can't you get Belgian waffles in Belgium? Because they're just called waffles.
Did you know the Belgians claim they invented French fries?
What? Did they?
It depends on if you believe the Museum of French Fries or not.
Where is the Museum of French Fries? Also,
clearly not in France.
In Bruges. Not, I'm not referencing the movie. It's literally in Bruges.
Where's the umlaut in that word? Okay, great. Museum of French Fries.
Sadly, show will go down in history.
At least, William, you paid for his Korean barbecue, correct?
No. He refuses to let me pay.
Does this intro have an end game?
Yeah, and the end game is the one. Daniel, and you know who the one is? The one way this works with you. Oh. Yeah. That's why we started recording early. So let's get into it in the news with Daniel T. Rickard.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad. These aren't harmless criminals. This isn't just a fad.
If you enjoy what we do here on the Midside, maybe you can be a Patreon patron by going to patreon.com/themidside and choosing to give us a couple bucks every time we produce one of these shows. We really appreciate it. Helps us keep the lights on, and we even release some exclusive content on there occasionally. But moving on to the important stuff this week. That's right. Moving on to the important stuff this week. Starting on a downer note, but a different angle on a downer note. So there was another school shooting recently, this time in Colorado at a STEM school. But the story that we're going to focus on here is students walking out of a vigil for the shooting victims because they say their trauma is being politicized. Gun rights advocates posted support on social media Thursday for students who walked out of a gun control rally in anger and tears over concerns the event inappropriately politicized their grief. The event Wednesday was primarily billed as a vigil to honor Kendrick Castillo, who was fatally shot in a rampage by two students at the STEM school. Speakers at the school's packed gymnasium, however, were mostly politicians and advocates pressing Congress for more restrictive gun laws. After about 30 minutes, hundreds of students from the STEM school stormed out yelling, quote, "This is not for us, political stunt, and we are people, not a statement." Candace Craig, who has three kids attending STEM, said it was just too early for a push to action. She said the trauma is still fresh for the thousands of parents and their kids who suffered through the shooting and the anxious hours that followed, quote, "We need quiet. We need familiar faces. We need to hold our babies. We will heal and we will rise stronger and ready to say enough," she said Thursday. "But right now, we are shaken. We are broken. We hurt for the families whose worlds were turned upside down and grief and loss. That's what we want the world to hear from us." Justin, what do you think about this? Kids walking out of a rally that was intended to be a vigil, but ended up being a bit of a political rah-rah show.
I know this is tragic because it's a school shooting, so I agree with you on that point. But I find it really interesting the way you framed this story, because I think this story is, again, ignoring the loss of life. Not ignoring, but putting aside the loss of life, because that's tragic the way this happened. But putting that aside, I think this is a net positive. I think this is a sign that the tide is starting to turn and people are starting to focus on what matters again. The responses are perfect. The idea that we need time to process this and deal with this and deal with the trauma and fix our psychologies before we can move forward from this. This is the complete opposite of what happened with Marjorie Stoneman in Florida. And I think this is a wonderful thing. The fact that they stood up for themselves, that these politicians showed how disconnected they are from the people and how it's all about their agenda, their talking points, and sticking to their mission rather than actually reading what's going on in the situation. They just look at topics and then say, okay, these are what we have to talk about to forward our agenda. And these kids stood up for themselves. And I think that's a wonderful thing. And I think it's a good sign for the future. Am I wrong about that?
Well, no, but to play devil's advocate, and I'll let William respond to this devil's advocate point, wouldn't the gun control people say, yes, we kind of get that, but at the same time, the way we are supporting you is to implement policies that will help fewer of you die? Wouldn't that be the sort of somewhat principled response, William?
I don't know if that would necessarily be a principled response, because...
What?
Because this isn't about those politicians. And I mean, what a terrible way to read a room. If you walk in there and you manage to cause hundreds of people to walk out because of not getting what the event is about, right? Take the political side out of it. Like, you couldn't tell while you're up there talking about federal legislation that this isn't what the audience was there to do. Wasn't there to hear, isn't what they needed. Like that, what a terrifyingly awful example of public speaking. This should be this should be studied in political science classes, right? Independent of the issue.
I can't put aside the political. You're saying the inability to read the room. I think they didn't care. I think they went there and they're like, well, this is what we're going to say, and that's the end of it. And I think that's also why the people got up and walked out. I think this was the inevitable conclusion when you put these two groups in this room together. And I think it's good.
I also appreciated in the article, and Daniel, you can probably appreciate this. They were pushing back against the reporters. The USA Today reporter, they were questioning the reporters and saying, what pictures are you taking? Which ones are you sharing? This is an event for us, right? Trying to control their own narrative in the media.
Yeah.
Well, right. And the next step of that, William, is when people organize these events, they need to say, hey, media, you're not invited. Hey, politicians, you're not invited. Rather than opening it up to everyone. That was their problem. They let the wolves into the hen house.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Yes, absolutely. It should not go without saying that Castillo, who was the 18-year-old who was killed and eight other students were wounded, he was 3 days away from completing high school, and two of his classmates were the ones who were shooters at the school. And I don't have the background in this story. William, I don't know if you know, or Justin, wasn't he involved in some way in helping stop the shooters?
I don't know the answer to that question.
Well, Midsiders out there can correct me and let me know. So the Brady campaign, you familiar there? The anti-gun control folks were the ones who helped organize this rally, and they did issue an apology. Quote, "We are deeply sorry any part of this vigil did not provide the support, caring, and sense of community we sought to foster and facilitate, and which we know is so crucial to communities who suffer the trauma of gun violence," they said in a statement. Justin, how does that statement read to you?
It reads, fuck you. To me, that's my response to them. It reads like, oh, that's what we have to say in order to get back on our agenda and back on our mission. It's just a PR statement to make themselves look better. Because what's the logical suppressed premise of what they're saying? So read it again. Read it again.
"We are deeply sorry any part of this vigil did not provide the support, caring, and sense of community we sought to foster and facilitate, and which we know is so crucial to communities who suffer the trauma of gun violence."
So, ban all guns.
Yeah. By ending it there on, you know, the way they put it, like, it's just... Here's a better statement, Brady campaign, or anyone who does something... not that they're sincerely apologetic, but let's say they were genuinely sincerely apologetic. How about the statement, "We really screwed up. There's no excuse for what we did. We will not do this again." How about that?
Because they will do it again.
Because they will do it again.
Yeah, this
because
is
they
absolutely
will leverage every
tragedy. This is a ghoulish attempt to politicize. Like, they know the media will be there. They know that outside of the actual grieving, you know, victims, that this plays well with their supporters. So yeah, of course they'll do it. They'll do it again. Why they couldn't
Daniel,
possibly
I have a
say
question for you.
Again.
Okay.
So in the year 2019, why, when we believe social media is so important, do people still continue to invite the mainstream media to events like this? I thought the mainstream media was dead and didn't matter anymore. Why do we still invite them? Shouldn't they have just posted this on their own social media?
It's true. I don't have a great answer to that, except that I think that social media is less important than we think it is. I don't know.
Well, that was the suppressed premise I was making. And I think deep down this is...
The regular media is less important than we think it is.
Right. My point was if they wanted coverage for this and they just invited the regular and they didn't invite the regular media and they just posted on social media, they might not have gotten coverage of it. But
oh,
here
no.
they
Come on now. We know that the news is just, they just take a tweet and they do a story on it. So I'm sure they could have come up with a tweet that would have gotten covered on the news.
Well,
reporting is literally just trolling Twitter. That's what a reporter's
Well, certainly
job is.
If you're going to have a vigil where you're just trying to support the family members of those who were killed or injured, I don't think you need to invite media at all.
Yeah,
just a heads up for the Brady campaign. Not really an invitation you should be sending out for a vigil. How about that?
Well, and wouldn't the best thing rhetorically for the Brady campaign to be, we respect your need to cope with this and deal with this and process this, so we are going to step away until the appropriate time to get involved? Wouldn't that be the best statement for them to make from a PR standpoint?
Well, of course, but that's too, I don't know, self-aware for folks like the Brady campaign or
yeah, how
or
does that raise money? How does that raise the money?
Right.
It raises the money because if I'm a rational, healthy person and I see them saying that, I go, oh, wow, this is a good organization. I want to give my money to an organization that's this rational and healthy and caring.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think they're going. Honestly, I don't think they're going for the rational donor crowd. They're going for the emotionalist.
Yeah.
Let me throw my wallet at you.
The crowd. Alyssa Milano sex boycott crowd.
Right. Exactly. Can we move on so we can speak of some other emotionalism?
Sure.
Yeah, that's all we do.
The media was in a frenzy this week after a Chicago Cubs fan flashed a, quote, white power symbol on air behind a black reporter.
Was it
KKK
again?
Wrigley Field. Wrigley Field has now banned the fan, who has not been identified publicly, and says that they will not stand for this. So, this fan who was wearing a Cubs sweatshirt, and he couldn't be seen, his face couldn't be seen during the broadcast, but it was a broadcast on, what's his name, Doug Glanville, who was giving a report sort of like on the they're not called sidelines, I don't know what they're called in baseball because I don't care because I don't watch it, but apparently the fan flashed the okay hand gesture. For anyone who's not familiar, you make an O with your pointer finger and your thumb, and then you leave your three other fingers up in the air like a W or a K, and it says okay. That is apparently a white
power. Wait, is that supposed to say okay? I didn't know
symbol.
That.
Yeah.
Oh.
You didn't?
Huh. I'm looking at it right now, and it looks like 3-0 to me. So.
The 30 sign?
You're pulling up racist imagery on your computer? I hope that's not your
No,
computer.
I'm doing it. I'm doing it. I'm doing it. I'm looking at my own hand.
If there was something.
Oh, man. You're doing a racist symbol. That's even worse.
Glanville thanked NBC Sports and Chicago Cubs for launching an investigation. He said, quote, they have displayed sensitivity as to how the implications of this would affect me as a person of color. But for those of you who are unaware, the OK hand gesture only recently emerged as a, quote, white power symbol. And even the Anti-Defamation League, who was interviewed for this story, says this about it. That new meaning stems from a hoax by members of the website 4chan to, quote, falsely promote the gesture as a hate symbol, claiming that the gesture represented the letters WP for white power. The hoaxers hoped the media and liberals would overreact by condemning a common image as white supremacist. But the ADL continues, but by 2019, at least some white supremacists seem to have abandoned the ironic or satiric intent behind the original trolling campaign and used the symbol as a sincere expression of white supremacy. But the ADL cautions that because the sign once had an innocuous meaning, particular care must be taken not to jump to conclusions about the intent behind someone who has used the gesture. Justin? What say you?
Oh, I thought you had an actual question. Usually you have an actual question.
Oh, no. I'm too verklempt to have a question.
You know, my brain said the word verklempt, and then you said it out loud, so obviously I have mind control powers.
That's right.
This is why you don't play the game Passcode with Password or whatever with Daniel and I.
That's right. We rule.
First they came for our something, then they came for something else. Now they're coming for our sports. Sports are the last bastion. This is the last thing we have in this culture. I mean, they've destroyed education. They've destroyed the entertainment industry, specifically movies, as we're about to see here in a little bit. And now they're trying to do it with sports. You know, on Belichick, your premises, I talked about how they were coming for football. It is now very apparent they're coming for everything.
Who is
every
they?
Sport.
Who is they?
Well, the evil people, the conspiracy. No, it's the left. It's the social justice.
The evildoers.
The evildoers. It's, I mean, more directly, it's the people who can't achieve on their own and feel like they have to destroy in order to be the ones who are successful. It's those people. So sports are ultimately about meritocracy, and it's about the celebration of meritocracy as art. All right, Daniel, this is what we wanted to talk about on Belichick Your Premises, on the season that never happened, the season that never was. And they need to destroy that, because the more that is shown to people and people are shown that they can achieve through their own effort, then these people who say, oh, we have to control society for you to make society equal, those people are not useful anymore. They have no use. So it threatens their very existence. So they have to come for sports. And you look at something like this. This guy is flashing. This could have been the okay symbol. This could have been, I saw many comments online about, you know, the circle game where it's like made you look.
Yeah.
A lot of people
were
saying
100% the circle game.
Yeah, that's what people were saying. They looked at it and they were like, oh, this is the guy who got his friends. And he thought it would be funny. Now, let me ask you this.
That was okay. Before you ask me that, why is everything automatically racism? I mean, I know the answer, but didn't we used to have this thing called the benefit of the doubt?
Well, yeah, but that's Daniel, just to concretize that, like, they banned him via sending him a letter because they tried to call him and he didn't answer, and so they just sent him a letter saying you were banned. So, you know how you're supposed to, even the ADL, like, oh God, the ADL is telling you to take context into account, and they didn't do that? They just sent him a letter automatically, like, this is, you know, you're automatically racist. Why is he automatically racist? Because he's white.
Yeah, I mean, isn't that ironically one of the most racist things you could possibly do?
Yeah, there's no other possibility, right? I mean, there is no, literally no other possibility other than you're a racist if you make that hand gesture, which is why we now know Justin is racist, because he made it to himself just moments ago.
I mean, I still use it ironically. So I use that emoji ironically all the time. So I must be racist.
What if I send the okay symbol with a black skin tone?
Oh, God.
Would my iPhone immediately report me to Facebook and Twitter to be banned?
Tim, could they personally show up at your house and take your iPhone away from you?
I use Black Santa all the time.
Black Santa?
Yeah, I mean, I take the Santa emoji and I make it black and I send it to people and they're like, what the fuck?
Good times.
But anyway, what I was going to say, Daniel, is to the point you were making is the benefit of the doubt disappeared when we internalize social justice's original sin. And what I mean by that is we've talked about this before. You know, Christianity, most specifically Catholicism, really has the idea of original sin built into it. But it's the idea that social justice has that many people hold, that humans are inherently evil and you have to work hard not to be evil. And that's what this is. Of course, this person's doing a bad thing. People are bad. So you have to curtail them. You have to control them so they don't give in to their worst impulses. This person is making a hand gesture behind this black guy because it's his worst impulses. Because when you put a television camera in front of someone, of course they're going to do something bad because that's what people do.
Yeah.
Yeah, no one could be rational and think, oh man, I'm going to have a jolly good time with my friends and play the circle game with them. It has to be, oh, I'm going to make a racist symbol.
Now look, so we can be the reality-oriented show that we intend to be. It is at least conceivable that this person is a white supremacist and they're making a white supremacist sign. I think the point that we're trying to make is...
You mean there might be one white supremacist in Chicago?
I think the point we're trying to make is that why do we assume the worst about ourselves?
Right. I mean, it could have been anything. We just don't have evidence to say why he was doing it. But to be reality oriented, this is the question I would ask you. And this question will lead into the trailer takedown later. How many white supremacists are there actually in this country? How many have you ever seen? And how many have you ever seen using the OK symbol anywhere but on the internet?
Yeah, I mean, it becomes an statistically infinitely small percentile. So I get the point you're making. I'm just saying that it's mathematically possible that this was a 100%. White supremacist.
I agree that it is 100%, 0.001% possible.
Thank you. As my grandfather would say of statistics, it's 50-50 because either it was or it wasn't. So
that's a Yogi Berra right there.
I'm going to call an audible and skip the Meghan Markle Prince Harry story because I just can't.
I was going to ask you though. So read the headline because I have to
ask
you a question.
Will Meghan Markle and Prince Harry raise their baby to be black?
Well, no, that's Daniel, I know you usually ask the questions during the news, but I have a question for you.
Okay.
Will you raise your son Pakistani? Wait. No, you're also Mexican. So will you raise your son brown?
What can brown do for you? The question is, I will raise my son to be rational. Or the answer to the question is, I will raise my son to be rational. And whatever he does with that, as long as he does it rationally, shall be great. Because you cannot raise your child to be black. You cannot raise your child to be brown. You cannot raise your child to be white. Your ethnicity is part of your genetics. That has nothing to do with anything. The question is, what culture do you choose? And I choose a culture of reason. The end. Okay, moving on to the much better story. A new petition demands that Brie Larson be replaced as Captain Marvel by a gay woman of color. Gentlemen, woke or joke? No, just kidding. Captain Marvel wasn't without its controversy, as Brie Larson seemed to anger quite a few when she made comments about the film's press tour being more inclusive. She also advocated for diversity in the MCU, and she said she's all about a female team-up Marvel movie happening. Just recently, she was quoted as saying the diversity needs to happen faster. She said, quote, I'm happy to be on the forefront of the normalization of this type of content and to prove once again that representation matters. Diverse storytelling matters. The female experience matters. And these are markers. Well, it turns out a group is advocating for more diversity in the MCU, but to push Brie Larson out of her role as Captain Marvel. A new petition simply titled Demand Captain Marvel is played by a woman of color, not Brie Larson, has surfaced onto the internet, and at this time of the writing, it has almost 10,000 subscribers. I'm actually going to check that number now in real time and see it actually now has nearly 17,000 signatures, subscribers, however they want to refer to it. So the petition reads, we need Brie Larson to step down from her role to prove she is an ally of social justice and ensure a gay woman of color plays the role. Let Monica, the original female and black Captain Marvel, instead of a whitewashing characters, let Monica, I don't quite get that. Anyway, point being, my question to you, Justin, is should Brie Larson step down for a gay woman of color, or is this a massive trolling campaign by someone on the alt-right?
So it's 4chan again?
That's right.
I mean, I hope it's 4chan, but I mean, we're now to the point that this parody, this type of satire is indistinguishable from the real thing. So I don't really know if it's effective at that point. If you're making satire, if you're making parody that's indistinguishable from the real thing, are you really achieving the point of your parody and satire? Because you need to make it so it's an obvious parody or satire. It's like if Jonathan Swift released An Indecent Proposal and everyone was like, really like, oh, yeah, you know, we should really consider eating babies. Then he would have failed as a satirist.
I don't know. I think you succeed. Like, I'm thinking back to those people who released all those fake papers. I think you succeed as long as people find out. It doesn't have to be obvious. Like, those papers are obvious to us, but they weren't obvious to the people who published those papers in the journals, talking about, you know, the releasing Mein Kampf with feminism words replaced and stuff like that.
I agree with that. But if this one isn't obvious to me and it isn't, then who is it obvious to that it's satire?
Well, I, for one, think that Brie Larson should step down because she's a terrible actress, not because we need to replace her with a gay woman of color. Now, if there happens to be, I bet I could find with a simple call to a casting director anybody that could act better than Brie Larson. So if it happens to be a gay woman of color, I wouldn't care, but we should get a better actress in for Captain Marvel.
I mean, I don't understand. Giving her the butch female haircut wasn't enough in Endgame?
enough to make her character interesting? No.
No, her character was not interesting.
Wouldn't it be funny if she had gotten fat instead of Thor? Then we could have body acceptance and Brie Larson.
Actually, the body acceptance people are mad about the Thor thing because they're saying it makes fat look bad.
All right, we'll get into that in a moment.
Yeah, we're getting ahead of ourselves.
Well, the story was meant as a transition point.
Spoilers: Thor is fat.
Yeah. Well, we're going to spoil all of it. So, William, get that spoiler drop ready.
That's right.
But no, warm it up.
I don't care. Look, I don't care. I mean, this is
Let's just get on with the hopeful romantic. Do we really care about Brie Larson and whether or not she's Captain Marvel or not? Does it matter one iota to anyone in the
zero
world?
Zero iotas.
Whether or not she continues to be Captain Marvel or whatever it is?
Not if you've seen Endgame. If you've seen Endgame, then you really should be done. So, saying that, let's go into the hopeful romantic with JML.
Focused on.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am not a genius. I say that I say that for a very specific reason. If you've been listening to the show for a long time, you know that in the year 2014, we had a long discussion about Winter Soldier, Captain America Winter Soldier. And in it, I said what would happen to Iron Man. And now we are here 5 years later, and it has come to pass. I, of course, am talking about Avengers Endgame, which I finally saw. And before we go too deep into that, I do want to talk a little bit about the technical side of the movie. But first, before going to the technical side, I want to ask you, have you both seen it, and did you both recall that we had had the discussion about Winter Soldier and foresaw this?
My answer is definitely yes. And in fact, I recounted much of our analysis to a coworker of mine who is in love with the Marvel Universe and claims, I'm not making this up, that it is the only movie series in recent history that represents conservative values and puts an emphasis on what America really stands for.
Well, wow. That's distressing.
Talk about bringing something to the art.
I said, what is your evidence? And he's like, look, Tony Stark gets married. Like, that's a family values thing. Like, oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God.
Well, this is the same people who say Batman versus Superman is about Jesus or Batman versus Superman is about immigration.
Yeah, this is just on the conservative side.
Right.
Yeah.
William? Absolutely. Have you seen it?
No.
Okay. Oh. Well, William, we're going to save you and spoil the fuck out of this right now. So everyone out there.
There's walkers in the barn and Lori's pregnant.
There you go. Just get ready to mash the fuck out of that button right now. Everyone out there, if you have not seen this movie, I'm not going to tell you not to see it. Okay. I didn't sit there and I'm like, this is terrible. It wasn't like from a technical standpoint, it wasn't horrible to sit through those 3 hours. There were enjoyable things about it. But from a technical standpoint, there were some pretty terrible things. So the first thing I want to say to you, Daniel, is considering the budget for this movie, didn't a lot of it look like it was shot very poorly, like very poor green screen, and it looked like it was lower budget than it was? Especially with the big fight scene at the end when they had everyone?
At this point, they just had to pay all the actors,
right?
I mean, 100%. What budget do you have left over for anything else?
That's 100% what I think it was. So it didn't even look good. I didn't even think it looked as good and was as interesting as Infinity War from a technical standpoint. And then the beginning of the movie, Daniel, really bugged me. Okay, so the movie opens with this great scene where, to remind people that when Thanos snapped his fingers, everyone disappeared, we see Hawkeye with his family, and, you know, he's out living in, like, the wilderness of Colorado or whatever on their ranch, and his family disappears and he's really confused. Then you go to the opening credits. Then they do this whole scene where Captain Marvel shows up and the Avengers go and try to get Thanos to unsnap what happened. But Thanos tells him he's already destroyed the... He used the stones to destroy the stones. And then they kill him. And it jumps to 5 years later. And then the 5 years later, it starts out really compelling. Where you start out with Captain America running meetings of people trying to cope with it. And you see Black Widow trying to cope with it. And you see Ant-Man come back to the world that's now the apocalypse and not know what's going on. And for my money's worth, Daniel, I thought that whole prequel part of the preamble part of killing Thanos was completely unneeded. I mean, I understand that it set up kind of Thor's storyline a little bit where he was guilty. He felt guilty, but you could have had Thor feel guilty about not going for the head and just going for the chest and how he could have ended everything just for going for the head. So you didn't need any of that. I thought it broke the tone of the movie and it took the movie more towards what the whole thing was. All of
you
this
could have
movie
at least done it as a flashback or something, right?
I thought that too.
Yeah, it didn't have to be chronological. The entire movie's about time and messing with time, so.
Right, and that was my first instinct as I was watching it. As I was watching the movie, is this can be inserted as a flashback later in the movie. And then the later in the movie was when Thor was like, who was the one that killed Thanos? I was. Then you just do the flashback to that scene.
Yeah.
Right. Absolutely. They could have done that too. But still, the point remains that this movie was more mechanical than anything. There wasn't thematic integration. For 3 hours of movie, there was very little content to this movie. That's how I that was one of the ways I felt when I left.
Yeah, I was genuinely bored for much of the movie. And I was even really engaged by Infinity Wars, which had a much better story arc to it and theme to it, even if I didn't like it still. It wasn't boring. This movie was just boring. Just boring. Endlessly boring.
Yeah, Infinity War is a much better movie, so I agree. And I can see how someone would be bored from it. So I'm not going to disagree with you on that. I was not particularly bored, but I did see, again, that there wasn't much content, so I can see how someone would get bored.
It is a rare day when I pull out my phone in a movie theater. But I was so GD bored. Like, I looked at my phone and I was like, oh my god, this has been going on for like 10 years already. And no, it was a mere hour and a half. I was only halfway through.
Yeah, so the only thing that kept me going was just seeing where they were going all with all of it and waiting for the moments that they were going to reveal what they did reveal. And I don't mean the ending. But again, one more thing before we get into all of that. I've seen people online saying that this ripped off Zack Snyder and his arc for the DC universe. I only saw one thing in this that was a very obvious ripoff. Thor living in the Nordic village and they have to go recruit him and convince him to take on his responsibility of the king that he is. And he's drinking beer the whole time. Wasn't that whole thing, Daniel, just a ripoff of Aquaman and Justice League?
As far as I can tell, yes, but remember that I have never seen Justice League.
Okay, well, it was. So,
okay.
Just wanted to say that. Okay, now
we
need to talk
Snyder
about
cut, right, Daniel?
Yes.
Right. Which is, hey, I applaud you. And in this day and age, I wish that I could be that pure. So, more power to you. And I don't mean that as like, you know, I am an unpure person morally. I just mean like I've got all this shit in my head now that I wish I didn't have in my head. And that's ultimately how I feel about Avengers Endgame. Here comes the big spoiler. Hit that button a few times, William.
There's walkers in the barn and Lori's pregnant.
That was one time.
That's all you get. You don't
that's
tell
all
them
I
what
get.
To do.
Okay. All right. I don't tell them what to do. Okay. So in Winter Soldier Gate, we said that ultimately what they're doing is they're destroying Tony Stark, Iron Man, and ultimately he's going to have to sacrifice himself to save the world. Well, that came to pass.
What?
And it was so much worse than I expected. you know, I had people who watched this movie and they told me, oh yeah, you're going to enjoy it. And I think they did Tony Stark's death well. They just had to have missed everything. They had to have missed everything. Here are the two most important parts that stood out to me, Daniel. The first thing is they all time travel to the past to get the Infinity Stones. And at one point, Tony Stark comes in contact with his father. And he basically has that conversation with his father that's like, how would you have done anything differently? And his father literally says, he literally says this, Daniel. It was very rare that the greater good outweighed my own self-interest.
Yes, I know.
Now, he didn't say selfishness. He didn't say narcissism. He said self-interest. Yep. You will never convince me that A, this was not a response to Zack Snyder's Superman, and B, that these people do not know what they're doing philosophically. You will never convince me of that. You will never convince. They literally use the phrase self-interest. And then they set up, here's the other thing, right? Remember how we were talking about in the OK story, the racist fan is banned because we have to take the worst possible interpretation of people, the idea of social justice, original sin. Well, it's also the malevolent universe premise. It was very clear to me they do not operate from the premise that everyone can win, right? The traitor principle, the idea that it's not one pie that we all get a little sliver of. The world is generally benevolent or it's generally indifferent, but everyone can be successful. They literally set this up in a way that the only way Tony Stark could be a hero was for him to give his life. And what I mean by that is they created a universe post-snap where the only one that was happy was Tony Stark. They Yep. even had a scene about it where they sat there and Gwyneth Paltrow, Pepper Potts is like, we got really lucky. You know that, right? But nobody else did. I mean, could they just have flashed the colors white or the colors, the words white privilege on the screen?
That actually might have got them an Oscar.
I mean, it's so obvious. So they set it up and they're like, oh, wow, Tony Stark is so privileged that even in the snap, things worked out for him. But that's not fair for everyone else. Now, to be fair, it wasn't really about race because they showed Clint suffering and he was white and all his family members are white. So I'm being facetious when I'm saying the white privilege thing. But the point is, it is that he is the rich white capitalist and they're doing that. They're undermining his self-interest. His self-interest is always at everyone else's expense. And then, you know, Doctor Strange, who, by the way, fucking, you want to talk about a plot mechanic in this movie? I leaned over to my girlfriend during the last fight, and Doctor Strange, I said to her when he, you know, when all the water starts coming, and he pushes the water back, I looked at her and I went, that fucking dude is the most powerful sorcerer in the world, and all he's done during this giant final fight for the future of the universe is push back some water? Because he had to be the plot mechanic to enable Tony Stark. Now, I know the argument is going to be that, well, he knew that the most important thing was protecting Tony Stark, so he was doing that. Okay, I get that, you fucking Marvel douchebags. I get that. But they could have done that in a more elegant way, and that's what I mean with the whole thing was purely mechanical. They just did it in a way to get to this point. Then, right before Tony snaps, Thanos says, I am inevitable. So evil is inevitable. And then Tony says, I am Iron Man. So this original statement that even in Iron Man 3, which undid Avengers, which saw the first self-sacrifice for Tony Stark when he takes the nuclear bomb and thinks he's going to die and goes into space, which retook I am Iron Man back as an individualist statement, they've now made I am Iron Man an altruistic, selfless, self-sacrifice statement by having him say it in that context. So I'm not going to lie. I cried during this movie, but I didn't cry for the reasons everyone else did. I cried because of how I literally watched the destruction of an amazing character, and I watched the attack on the rational way of approaching the world. I saw these people create a fantasy that was so disconnected from reality to create and put forward their worldview. And it was tragic. It was, dare I say, evil, Daniel?
I mean, insofar as it is purposeful, which I think it is, and insofar as it's a purposeful attack on the ideas of individualism and capitalism, then yes, it is evil. I do think that there are certainly levels of evil. It's not just evil and not evil. But it was clear throughout this movie, I think, and throughout the series, they were building toward this point, and that they could not have known that they were, that they could not have been unaware that they were building toward this point. So I was tearing up as well, for all the wrong quote unquote reasons, according to, the makers of this film.
Okay, and to add to what you're saying, the other little things that sort of added to this, I mean, when, how about Captain America gets to live a happy life, go back in time and live a happy life. Why does he do that? Oh, because of Tony Stark. And Captain America is supposed to be the hero we rally around at the end, right? Yeah. And so he's old and he gives his shield. Look, when my Asian girlfriend who grew up in California has Michelle Obama's book and follows Kanye and others on social media, says to me, oh, of course they're going to make him black, to the fact that they gave the Captain America shield to Sam and he's going to be the next Captain America. Now, I guess that's in the comics, but, you know, Bucky also, I guess, becomes Captain America in the comics. The fact that she said that means it's obvious how transparent it is. All right. In another place, it was really transparent, where I got really fucking mad. I got mad in the movie, Daniel, during the final fight where they gave the football, the Infinity Gauntlet, which they're trying to keep away from Thanos. They gave it to Captain Marvel, and then they needed that gratuitous, completely unnecessary shot of all the female heroes together protecting the gauntlet.
Yeah.
You could have literally achieved that same thing, achieved the same plot mechanic by just having Captain Marvel shoot across the screen with the gauntlet. You didn't need that fucking gratuitous shot, but it was pandering. It was pandering to the social justice crowd. Look, and we have a bunch of female characters.
Yeah. No, I agree. They're also, I think they're setting up a movie there, but,
well, yeah, because DC's doing it first. They're doing Birds of Prey, the Harley Quinn female movie.
Yeah. Let's get into the Captain Marvel thing for a second here. So Captain Marvel comes back at the end. She's not in the entire movie, basically. After
she's
the,
in the beginning
intro.
And the end.
And she comes back at the end, decimates the entirety of Thanos' army, right? Destroys
well, she,
his
she,
ship.
She Independence Days the ship.
Yes. She is, for all intents and purposes, totally 100% invincible in this universe. She is the most powerful character by leaps and bounds in the Marvel Universe. And they bring her back. She decimates the entirety of Thanos' army, basically, and then goes and starts kicking Thanos' butt. And for, I mean, if there's any plot logic whatsoever, she is the one who has the ability to stop Thanos from getting the gauntlet. Couldn't she just take the gauntlet and, now that Thanos has no ship, fly as far away as she possibly could? And just, he could never have it, and he could never have any of the stones, and it'd be totally defeated on Earth.
Considering she can fly and breathe in space, yes.
Yes. Couldn't she just, even if he has the gauntlet on, could she just rip off his arm and fly away with it? But that's what makes, it's already gratuitous. It's already disgusting that Tony Stark has to kill himself. But what makes it even worse is that you have a character who's literally invincible, and you still say, for the greater good, Tony, you must die.
Well,
you have a character who can literally do anything to kill Thanos. She could just put her power fist through his face and kill Thanos immediately. But no, Tony Stark, you must die. Even in the rules we've set up where we have an invincible character, you must die.
Well, isn't that to serve the sacrifice, right? Isn't his sacrifice greater because it's needless?
Yes, that's what I mean. That's what makes, I mean, it's gratuitous that he has to do it anyway, but even it just makes it just totally disgusting in this context.
But can you imagine if they had actually had her sacrifice herself? I mean, it would serve, that would serve the comics, right? Like that would, you know, her sacrificing herself to take out Thanos and destroy the gauntlet. Let's say, like, you set up the plot that way. you know, they couldn't do that in today's climate, right? That would make for a better story, right? An invincible, two seemingly invincible beings, you know, annihilating each other, one to try and kill half the population, the other to destroy the weapon.
Yeah. It would have been better. I think the movies would have been bad still, but it would have been, that's much more integrated, in a certain sense. I mean, disintegrated in the sense that they've been setting up Tony Stark's sacrifice for since Avengers 1 or whatever.
Since Disney bought, let's be very clear about this. Since Disney bought Marvel Studios is when it's, they've been setting this up. Iron Man 1 and 2 do not have this setup at all. And once that happened, and you know, I think we have to give kudos to Shane Black for what he did with Iron Man 3, because he tried to combat this in Iron Man 3 and he was just roundly shit on by everyone. And they say he was shit on for the Mandarin twist, but I think we can see that now he was shit on for going against the prevailing winds. And what you guys are talking about with the disintegration is, Daniel, what about in the final fight? Like, for some reason, Thanos could just punch her in the face and that would be the end of it. Talk about being disintegrated. You set up everything, and then all of a sudden...
Difficult to see, but he pulls out an Infinity Stone and punches her in the face.
All right, the Power Stone, okay.
Yeah, right. Nonetheless.
They didn't have to do that, though.
They didn't have to do that at all, because she could have just easily ripped off his arm and flown away with the gauntlet. Or just, you know, just ripped out the stones herself and flew them away.
Or how about
any of them could have taken any individual stone out and run away with them.
Right. Or, at the beginning of the movie, without the gauntlet, Thor cuts off his arm and then cuts off his head, his being Thanos. Well, at the end of the movie, when he shows up without the gauntlet and he's just sitting there, why is it so hard to beat him then?
Yeah. It's all...
I mean, I guess at the beginning ridiculous. They would say he didn't care as much, which is why it was his work was done, which is why it was easy to kill him. But the three of them should have been able to kill him at the beginning, and Thor should have been able to use his Stormbreaker. Oh, and then by the way, that Captain America holding the hammer,
yeah, so gratuitous. He's worthy.
Yeah, because he's worthy. So gratuitous.
Yeah. So all of it is fairly terrible.
And they're doubling down on this, Daniel. Did you stay and watch the Spider-Man trailer?
There was not one for me.
Oh.
They put that in this weekend, I think.
Okay, well, they had it at the end. And have you seen the Spider-Man trailer?
No.
Okay, literally in the fucking trailer, this is a line. I'm not making this up. This is word for word. Saving the world requires sacrifice.
Oh.
They are doubling down on this shit in Marvel.
Wow.
Yeah. There is no reason to continue watching Marvel. They're going to ride Black Panther, they're going to ride Spider-Man, and they are going to ride this altruism crap.
They can't ride Spider-Man for very long. I don't know if you saw the upcoming movies that Disney released, but, you know, Spider-Man reverts back to Sony. So
they'll cut a new deal.
Yeah, they're not going to ride Spider-Man very long.
The whole trailer was setting up Spider-Man as the new Iron Man, saying, oh, he's passing his legacy on to you. And even Nick Fury is showing up in the movie to try and get him to be the leader of the new Avengers. So they'll cut a new deal. But before we move on to trailer takedown, one final question, Daniel. And this question has to be asked because of all the people that say Superman's death in Batman versus Superman is also a self-sacrifice. What's the difference here? Why is Superman's death not a self-sacrifice and Tony Stark's is?
I haven't thought about it in particular, in the comparison, I mean. I will say that it appears to me that Superman's death was necessary for him to save everything that he values. And my immediate reaction to the other death, Tony Stark's, is it's 100% not necessary to save what he values. They have won, in essence, or they could have won, in any number of ways, and it is a sacrifice because there are any number of ways to win, and yet the writers or the universe or whatever calls on him to die anyway. His death is senseless. It is literally a sacrifice in the sense that it's giving up a greater good for the sake of a lesser one.
Right. So the counterpoint to that is going to be that they set this up with the plot mechanic of Doctor Strange saying this is the one way that they win. But that's the point. From a meta standpoint, this is where you have to look outside of it at the writers, at the writing. The writers set up Endgame to make it so the only way that Thanos would die and the Avengers would win would be for Tony Stark to die.
Yeah.
They made absolutely. The movie disintegrated in order to do that. They ignored their own characters. They ignored their own plot mechanics in order to do that. Whereas Batman versus Superman set up that Superman chose to die to protect his world, to protect Lois, and it made sense with everything that had happened in the story beforehand. That is the difference, is the way they set up and the links they went to. And also, you can't ignore the context around the rest of it. It was shown in Batman versus Superman to be in Superman's self-interest. You know, Martha saying, you don't have to be a hero. That's up to you. Him learning that Lois is his world. You know, in Man of Steel, choosing this is his world. Whereas in Endgame, it was shown that it was against Tony Stark's self-interest to die. He was finally happy. He finally had the life he wanted. And they explicitly said the greater good. They drew the explicit dichotomy with Tony's father, the greater good versus self-interest. That is the difference.
To use a word, Justin, Tony Stark's death is a sacrifice because it is inevitable.
Yeah, and that's the point they were trying to make. That was the point they were trying to make, is in the universe it was inevitable. Whereas Superman is more what people mean when they mean conventionally sacrifice, because it wasn't inevitable and he chose to do it. But that's also why it's not a sacrifice. Choosing to die for your values is not a sacrifice. You're saying that life would not be worth living without my values. Whereas Tony Stark has plenty to live for. And that's the ultimate point, is they've set up a universe. And this is what I was saying earlier in the review when I was saying they've set up a malevolent universe. They've set up a universe where Tony Stark has to choose between everyone else's happiness and his own happiness, everyone else's values and his own values. And what makes him a hero is ultimately, by dying, he recognizes that everyone else's values are superior to his. Yeah. Everyone else sees that as heroic. Marvel is positing that as heroic. We are positing that that is tragic, if not evil. Well, talking about evil, I think we have some trailers to talk about this week. As always, the trailers are posted usually by Saturday morning. They were a little early this week, so if you were vigilant on themidside.com, you could have seen the trailers on late Friday night. Ooh, that's exciting. And you know what? Really, you can watch them whenever you want. You can watch them before the episode. You can watch them after the episode. You can watch them during the episode. You could say, watch a trailer, stop it, listen to us, watch the next trailer, stop it, listen to us.
Before we get there, gentlemen, sorry, little meta behind-the-scenes stuff here. My child is now awake and terrorizing my mother, so I need to go get him and perhaps bug out for the rest of the episode, but I'll try to be back with child in hand. But you should continue, and I'll give you my trailer takedowns later on social media.
Trailer takedown. First trailer.
The Watchmen TV series has finally released its first trailer, and I think this is relevant to what we were just talking about. When we're talking about attacking Zack Snyder's interpretations on things and just be purely disgusting, this trailer starts out with Rorschach as a cult, where he's got a group of people following him, and they even have Jesus in the background, and then it cuts to the police saying that the police are being targeted by this Rorschach cult, and then it cuts to two black people saying they're at risk of the Rorschach cult. I mean, turning Rorschach into an alt-right figure, turning an alt-right in itself, we've discussed the history of that, how that's a false, made-up, propped-up term to associate it with white supremacy. And to do that to Watchmen, I mean, you're telling me that's not a response to Zack Snyder's take on Rorschach? You know, never compromise, not even in the face of Armageddon? I will not be watching this. This is arguably evil. It's disgusting. I can't believe more people aren't upset about this. And after seeing Endgame and after seeing this trailer, if you still support Zack Snyder and watch his movies and think they're not about individualism and think they're not about reason, then I don't know what you're watching anymore. I don't know how there are people out there who call themselves socialists and Zack Snyder fans, and they think they're into social justice and they're Zack Snyder fans. I don't know what you're seeing. It is very obvious what is going on here. It was very obvious this was made as a response to Zack Snyder's Watchmen. And I am not here for it. Tackle.
Tackle.
Yeah, so tackle. I was super confused, so I'm definitely going to tackle this.
Second trailer.
The Loudest Voice is the story of the founding of Fox News, I think. I'm disappointed Daniel left because I was hoping...
This is just evil white man,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I was hoping...
Evil fat white man.
I was hoping Daniel could talk about this to tell me the reality of this, because I don't know the reality of this trailer. I just know the way it doesn't jive with reality for me is they're acting like Fox News, you know, the evil right-wing station, is the only station that tries to feed a reality to their viewers that isn't real. And they're trying to prop him up like this evil white man who founded it, as if he's the only one who's ever done that, as if every other news station doesn't do that. And as if Fox News does that worse than any other news station, right? That's what the left has been trying to say for years, right? Oh, look how deluded Fox News is.
Yeah,
well, for my money, for a long time, Fox News was more reality connected than any station was. I'm not saying it is anymore, but for a while it was.
I think you can make an argument. I mean, ever since Trump got elected, you know, especially like MSNBC is just like gone completely off the deep end. So while they're all disconnected from reality, certainly I think Fox, CNN, most of the time they're a little more grounded than the other news stations, especially MSNBC.
I heard a baby. So for me, this is a tackle, and I wish Daniel could tell us about the reality of this trailer. But go ahead, William.
The reality of the second one?
Yeah, I put the second one in especially for you, The Loudest Voice. We already talked about the first one and how Watchmen is basically turning Rorschach into an alt-right figure, and it's disgusting.
Yep, tackle.
Tackle.
Thank you.
So what about The Loudest Voice? My question is, this is what I was saying, is I don't know the reality of this, the real story. But I do know from just my knowledge and experience of the world that this is obviously a lie, that this whole thing they're doing. So what is the reality of this story versus the trailer?
So I think what they're doing is mixing in some things that are true to make you think that the whole thing is true. So the things that are true is that Roger Ailes did have a lot of sexual harassment claims toward him, and he did some untoward things with employees, which is no good. Hopefully you can hear my child in the background. Pod Kid. He's very excited to be
Pod
here
Brad.
When I record. Pod Brat. Hi, Pod Brat. But the stuff about, like, you know, people don't want to be informed. They want to feel like they're informed. All this stuff is totally ridiculous and is put in there to be pure propaganda. There's no evidence that Roger Ailes thought this. Roger Ailes thought he was doing... a service to the country by providing some alternative voice to a cacophony of leftist nonsense that the media had become. So, it's mostly false, I suspect, or at least from what I understand, and then some sprinklings of true, so that he can be condemned thoroughly.
So, Daniel, that jives with what I was just saying, which was. This idea that nobody wants to be informed, they just want their worldview reinforced, that's more of a leftist approach to the news.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, anyone who's ever watched CNN or MSNBC or read the New York Times knows that it's not so much about reporting so much as it is about making you feel reinforced about whatever it is you already believe, so... Isaac agrees.
Tackle.
Did you already tackle this one, William? I don't remember.
Yeah, I tackled it, but I'll tackle it again for good measure.
Tackle. Final trailer.
It Chapter 2 is the sequel and hopefully final one. I hope they actually tell a finite story here to the surprise smash horror hit It, which I thought was tremendous. This trailer was just a teaser of a scene, and then they did a flash of a teaser that played a cut of a scene where Jessica Chastain, a grown-up of one of the Losers Club, goes back to Derry and meets with this old woman who seems to actually be It. And then it cuts to a bunch of like cutaway scenes from the rest of the movie. The scene itself actually didn't look very compelling to me. It looked very cliche. It might play better in context. I'm hoping it plays better in context because the first movie was so good that I'm going to see the second one. The trailer, though, it didn't do anything for me, but I'm still going to hug the movie.
Hug?
This one's pretty quick for me. It's probably going to be good. It's just not my genre. I'm not interested, and I absolutely will not be seeing it, but not because I make any judgments on its quality. Tackle.
Tackle.
I did not see the remake of It. Again, not my genre. I don't really get into horror that often. But I also didn't like this trailer at all. I don't think this is a good... If you want to get folks excited, this just didn't seem like it had anything that was interesting or new. It looks like it could be a paint by the number sequel, which is always something that's a danger for a sequel, and there's nothing in this trailer that shows that it's going to be anything more. So tackle,
which is disappointing because the movie is based off the second half of the book. So I don't know how it could be paint by the numbers. It's not like they don't have source material. It's not like they're just making up material to have a sequel. So
yeah, but you got to put that in the trailer, right?
What do you have to put in the trailer?
You have to leave people with the impression that there's more to tell.
Oh, and you're saying they didn't?
I'm saying
yeah. No, I agree. It's whether the movie's good or not, we can all agree the trailer is poorly made.
Yep, definitely.
Okay, well, that concludes the movie section for this week. I think that was enough for you.
Does that mean we have to pick one of these crap things that we say we would hug? Or not hug, but watch at some point?
Oh, you two do. Yeah. I hugged the last one, so that's on you two.
Jeez. This is a murderer's row of terrible for me.
Well, it's all terrible for now. I mean, I'm really sour. I'm really down after Endgame. Like, there's not a lot of hope. Like, even have you seen the trailers for the new Aladdin? Where, like, they're like, Jasmine's going to become the Sultan. And I'm like, fuck off. If you actually go in that direction, you're going to ruin Aladdin. Like, I get it. Like, yeah, her whole thing was like, I have a mind of my own and I want to be free and make my own decisions, which is cool. That's part of Jasmine's original plot. But if you pervert the story that much to make her Sultan at the end of it to fit social justice into it, that's like worse than making Gaston a murderer in the live action Beauty and the Beast. So I don't have much hope. I mean, the Aladdin looks good. I'm just worried from the trailers that I'm hoping those trailers are just to go with the prevailing winds and they're not actually what they did with the story.
Well, this just
there's
in.
There's walkers in the barn and Lori's pregnant.
At the end of Aladdin, Jasmine kills Jafar and then becomes Sultan. So it's already...
Wait, did you just spoil the movie for me?
No.
Oh. Because that's how down I am. I actually believe that that could happen.
For a moment, I was like, did he see an advanced screener or something?
100%. I thought he knew something. I did.
If I have to watch one of these pieces of crap, I'm going to guess see the Roger Ailes one. Because it's more a genre that I like, but I'm not going to like it. I'm not going to enjoy it.
Yeah, I would see the It remake.
That's a commitment of two movies, though, because you get to see the first one.
That's true.
That's how much he hates the other two.
That's how much I hate the other two. Oh my God, do I not want to watch how everyone is evil? All men are evil. All conservatives are evil.
That sums up both movies, actually. All right, let's round out this episode and head into Life on the Midside. On this segment, I usually try to find things that are more broadly applicable that they have some sort of idea overall that can apply to everyone's life. And maybe there's something in here that can apply to everyone's life. But I just want to recount an experience I had that made me it enraged me very much. And I had to work hard to press that rage down to get along. And I guess maybe that's part of it, is sort of like, where is the line between like your own self-interest, as far as when you have to balance like what you enjoy versus getting along with a team at work. I think maybe that's the broader point we can go into here. But at my job, we had to set up an event offsite. We had to do a workers' memorial at one of the maintenance stations. And it was we had to be there from like 7 a.m. to about noon. So by the time we've got everything broken down, we have to figure out a place to eat lunch. So there are a couple fast food places I like in the area. You know, I suggested, I was like, why don't we go to Raising Cane's, or why don't we go to Farmer Boy's? I was almost instantly shot down. And my team was like, okay, why don't we go to Old Town Orange? Daniel, would you say like Old Town Orange is like this sort of like hip, people like to go because they have like this hipster mentality? Oh, wow, it's so cool because it's like an old Americana town.
Yeah, it's how California does that kind of thing, right? Like some places, this is just called the town of Orange. But in California, it's, you know, Old Town Orange. And it's because there's a building there that was built over 50 years ago.
Wow. Ancient history here in California. Yeah.
Right. So they decide they want to go there. Now, the reason I can't just take my own car and go wherever I want is because the car they drove in, an SUV, all the materials had to be put in there. So the people that came in the car, two of them have to come with me. Or one of them, really, because somebody else took their own car as well. One of them had to come with me in order to everyone go to eat together. So I'm like, okay, I guess I just have to bear this burden because of it. But then we get to Old Town Orange. You know, I figure we're going to pick some like California restaurant, right? Like something like gastropubby type restaurant or some like hipstery type restaurant. We get there and we go to Wahoo's Fish Tacos. And I have a tiny burrito for lunch. So to recap, I was told, no, we can't do these fast food places, so we can go to another fast food place. Now, I'm not saying that they shot my places down because they were fast food, but it seemed to me they were more concerned about where the restaurant was than what the restaurant itself was. Because the area we were in wasn't like an area which is cool and hip. They didn't want to eat there, but they did want to eat in Old Town Orange. So it was okay to go to a fast food place there. First of all, I was annoyed we were going to Old Town Orange because I was like, okay, I'm going to have to pay extra money for less food and food I'm not going to enjoy as much. But then when we went to a fast food place, we get there and we go to a fast food place. Do you have any idea how hard it was for me to keep my mouth shut? And should I have even kept my mouth shut? I mean, at what point do I stand up and I say, well, I'm not going to be able to get enough food here to feed myself. And also the food here isn't very good. Why didn't we go to those other better fast food places?
I think perhaps the better way to handle it, because I think you should say something, you need to at least plant the seed of stupidity in their minds, would be to make a joke about it. Like, you know, not that this is a good joke, but like, oh, sure, glad we drove, 15 extra miles to get more expensive food or something, you know. Because you do need to say something. That's a little absurd. If you're going to go there and go to a specific place in Old Town Orange, like if someone said, hey, I know this phenomenal diner in Old Town Orange and we should go there instead, I get it. If it's, I'm going to go there to go to a chain restaurant, that's obnoxious.
So you agree then? I'm not... Maybe my anger is irrational. We can debate that. But my assessment that they're being stupid isn't irrational, correct?
It's at least perturbing in the sense that you didn't go there to go to a place of something you can only get in Old Town Orange. You went there to get Wahoo Fish. Like, that's a chain. That's a fairly terrible chain at that.
Yeah, and to add more context to this, Raising Cane's is just coming out to California. It's a chicken finger place that was founded in New Orleans. It's similar to Zaxby's, Daniel. And the only places are by the maintenance station we were at and in Santa Ana on the other side of Orange County. So I had been looking forward to going to it for like 2 days because I was like, oh, we're going to be over by Raising Cane's. I'm going to get lunch there. I was looking forward to it so much that that night I went to dinner there. That's how angry I was. I drove back there to go to dinner.
So here's my question
Justin,
for you.
I think what
in how you might handle this, Justin, which is, did you feel obligated to eat lunch with them? And if so, why?
Yes. And the reason, the word obligation is interesting. So I'm going to go with my first instinct of yes. I felt obligated because, and maybe this is something to talk to my therapist about, or maybe this is a therapy session right now. I was afraid of what the blowback was going to be if I didn't eat lunch with them. I was afraid of them getting mad at me. So basically, I felt like I was carrying the burden of, and this is how I feel often in California. It's one of the main reasons I want to leave here. I felt like I had to carry the burden of their irrationality so I could continue to exist in peace by going along with them. That if I didn't go along with them, it would always be like, oh, jokes about how, oh, Justin had to go to Raising Cane's and Justin couldn't eat lunch with us. And they would have said things to me then. I just felt like there would have been long lasting consequences. And that's what I mean about the balance. I felt like in order to make my life easier going forward, I had to, in a sense, suffer in the short term.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think one of the places you should evaluate here, and anyone who's facing similar situations, is, you know, if the feeling you have in the moment is correct and necessary and what the consequences genuinely would be, to share a sort of small story. And obviously work cultures are different and general cultures are different where I live, but coworkers of mine often want to go for a drink after work, and they only ever want to go to this place down the street from us called Bottom Line. And the reason they want to go there, especially on Fridays, is there's like dollar Miller Lite bottles. And I often, in fact, pretty much never have said, yes, I want to go there, because I'm at a place in my life where dollar Miller Lite bottles are not appealing to me at all. And I think that place in my life was being born and having taste buds.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And like they're always like, but you never go out with us. It's like, pick literally any other place and I will go out with you, but I'm not going to make that sacrifice. I'm just not. The $3 I'm going to save is not worth drinking crap and wasting a bunch of money at this place that is terrible. And it's not like it has a great vibe either. It's in a GD basement somewhere with no windows.
Thing that annoyed me was like, it's not like I love Old Town Orange. You know what I mean? Like go to the fucking South and you have so many better towns that are the same style, you know?
Yeah. Now, if they had said they want to go to Jersey Mike's,
if they were like Jersey Mike's in where?
Long Beach,
there
California.
You go. If they had said that, downtown. I would have gone there. I would have been like, hell yeah. I heard they just fixed their bread oven.
Well, Justin, I was going to say, you know, the only thing I would have maybe done differently is, you know, when you get that initial pushback of, oh, we want to go here, just making your case. I mean, just selling it like with a smile, right? Saying like, oh, I'm super excited about it. This is, you know, only two locations in Orange County. They're just coming from, you know, basically everything you told us. And, you know, and then just leave it at that. And then if I really wanted it, I would have just gone. I mean, you're the driver. I would have just gone through the drive-thru and picked up some food and then taken it all to where they were going and eat it with them. But I do that a lot because, you know, because of my gluten problem, I'll bring food to places all the time. If people want to go somewhere that doesn't have food that I can eat, like, for example, I bet they all only have breaded chicken at this place you're talking about. So I would bring something and enjoy it, right? Because the purpose of lunch with the team for me is always the social interaction and not the food. Does that make sense?
100%.
Like the purpose of a team. So I would make sure to remove any distractions I would have, which would be like, I wouldn't be able to eat, then I'll go get food beforehand and just make it like it's no big deal, right? Oh, it's no big deal. I just can't eat there, so I'm going to grab something real fast.
Yeah, and you have a good out there with the gluten thing, but that's 100% what it is that I...
Well, you can make your own out too, right? Like the gluten thing isn't... You're right, it is an easy out for me, but make your own out, right? Say like, oh, I'm super excited about this place. I've just been thinking about it all day. I just can't help myself. I'm going to grab it and then I'll eat with the rest of you guys.
They wouldn't accept that, though. They would take that as being selfish.
So? you're achieving... This is the therapy part. So what? You're doing what you want, and you're achieving the goal of a team lunch, which is being there with the team and socializing.
I get what you're saying. I guess just my experiences in the past, if I try and do something like that, they're saying, why are you being difficult? Why are you being an asshole, basically? And that's the therapy part.
Well, that's why you got to do it with a smile, because if someone says that, you can just laugh. Yeah.
And lantern hang it. Look, I know I'm an asshole. I'm getting Raisin Cane's. I'll bring it to get to Wahoo's or wherever the hell we're going.
Yeah.
And I had, really.
I mean, to be fair, I had seeded it earlier in the day. I had mentioned, like, oh, man, I really want to go to Raising Cane's. But their pushback was, like, we had gone there months ago, so they didn't want to go there again, which is another California
having
thing.
Having something once every 3 months.
Yeah. But that's like a California thing, right? This is where they all call themselves foodies, and they fetishize the new and the different and blah, blah.
They go to Wahoo's Tacos.
I know. And that's the other thing. When I suggested it again, they didn't really respond. They did the California thing where they ignore what you say and then do what they want anyway. And you're just like, this isn't even a conversation. You know what I'm talking about, right, Daniel?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They're like, where should we go for dinner? I used the exact example you were doing. What do you want to do tonight? And then you say, let's do karaoke. And then they just keep talking.
Yeah.
You're like, wait, I said something.
Yeah.
Can we respond to that thing?
Yeah.
No.
100%. So... basically,
hey Daniel, let's do karaoke.
So Justin, what do you want to do tonight?
Karaoke sounds fine with me. I don't have a problem with that.
No, joke killer.
Man, I know.
I want to see Endgame.
No improv skills. No improv skills.
That's better. Why would you want to see it? Yeah, it's funny. By the way, I know we didn't talk about this earlier, and we're sort of transitioning to the end of the show. I was not going to see Endgame. I really wasn't. I had no particular interest save for maybe the review on this show. My wife basically dropped me off in a movie theater and said, I'll pick you up after you see Endgame. And the reason is she wanted to rant so hardcore and swear up a storm about how they treated Tony Stark that she would not live in a world where she could not do that with me and it be spoiled in some way.
That is true love.
Yeah.
Well, what's more disturbing is that sounds like me.
She was and still continues to be so ridiculously angered by the treatment of Tony Stark that she's like, Marvel can go, you know, suck a D. I'm never watching another Marvel movie.
Well, good. And no one should ever watch another Marvel movie. I mean, the original phase is over. Although I guess they're saying the Spider-Man movie is part of this, you know, phase three. So whatever. But the original movement is over. There's no reason to watch another Marvel movie. And, you know, good on her, although I would say that, Daniel, is her anger better or worse than our sadness? And the reason I'm asking is, it's sort of like the stages of grief, maybe, is what I'm asking. Is our sadness further along on the stages of grief, and she's at anger because, like, she's just, you know, seeing these things for the first time? And for us, we're kind of like, we're more down the road, especially because we saw this coming?
Yeah. I don't know. I think there's sort of a, like, what could have been for us. And to her, it's just like, this is what is. There is no could have been. And so go F you, Marvel. You're insane.
Has she seen the first two Iron Men?
Oh, yeah. Iron Man is by far her favorite, you know, superhero ever. She loves Superman next. Hates Batman. Just putting that out there. But, yeah, she loves the Iron Man movies. We watch them constantly in our home. Between Iron Man and Bill Burr, there's nothing else on our television.
Again, sounds like me.
So.
All right. So I think the takeaway from this episode is just go back and watch the first two Iron Man again. It's the only antidote to all of this. Or you could just watch Man of Steel and Batman versus Superman as well. All right, let's put a bow on this episode. What did we learn this trip, William?
I learned that there is no truth to the rumors that there is a Change.org petition to replace me with a lesbian woman of color.
Maybe dye your skin, though.
That rumor is also false.
Daniel?
I learned that the next time someone plays the game with me, I just get to yell racist at them and walk away. Justin, what did you learn this week?
I learned that the end of the Aladdin live-action remake is Jasmine killing Jafar and becoming Sultana.
Someone put that in an envelope and sign it right now. And we'll look like mad geniuses. William will, at least.
We don't already? We fucking called Endgame 5 years ago! 5 years ago!
Spoiling movies 5 years before they come
Jesus.
Out.
Jesus!
Thanks, Midsiders, for tuning in this week. We hope you learned something. You can tell us about it at The Midside, everywhere on social medias. TheMidside.com/podcast, where you can go to listen to things. Right, Isaac? Right? And, I forgot. Isaac's big brown eyes have made me forget everything about my life. Patreon.com/TheMidside, where you can go to give us a couple bucks every time we produce a show. It helps us keep the lights on. Thank you, Patreon subscribers. Thanks to Liberty.me for syndicating us. Tell a friend. It really helps keep the lights on. Until next time, we love you lots.
This concludes your journey into The Midside. I'm Justin Elmasneski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a day!
That was a really energetic have a day there, William. I liked it.
Thank you.
Yeah. Isaac was a good kid. Not a lot of screaming.
Yeah, he was obviously upset at the Watchmen trailer and the Fox News trailer as well. So who can blame him?
Clearly.
Yeah.
Not a fan. So smart kid.
That was Isaac's first tackle.
Isaac's first tackle was last night when the dog speared him like Goldberg when he was running for the ball.
Wow.
And knocked him clear over.
Daniel dropped a professional wrestling reference.
The world is coming to an end.